Well, good morning, everybody. Merry Christmas. It is 4 days from Christmas. Is anybody stressed out? A couple people. We get to think about some inconveniences of Christmas to begin with, and sometimes there are aspects of Christmas that just feel a little inconvenient, and some of you might be in that. It just can be a crazy busy time where we fill our schedules with lots of extra commitments. There's Christmas parties, there are family gatherings, there are service projects. I mean, your church does service projects sometimes. Then some of the things you're excited about, you want to go to. Other things, you're just going because you need to. And then there's shopping. Oh my goodness, shopping. Some of you love to shop and you love to find that perfect gift. I'm not one of those people. I like to give. I don't mind giving. I just don't like looking for the gift, trying to come up with it. And that's just sometimes can be stressful for me to try to think of what appropriate gifts. But think about what aspects of this season feel inconvenient for you. I think about Ebenezer Scrooge, our family's reading the Christmas Carol. And he viewed Christmas from a businessman's perspective as nothing more than a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. Why should he give his clerk a day off and pay him for it? A day's wages for no work. Bah, humbug. That's how he saw it. And there are certainly things about Christmas that are inconvenient. Yet you look at different people, and some people handle those inconveniences with joy, and other people handle them with burden. What's the difference? Our kids today are a great example of joyful inconvenience. They have been working hard on this special Christmas play, and they're excited to perform that for you guys in just a few minutes, and they're working on it right now, I believe. They have scheduled this all out. The older kids especially have been just really working hard. They designed the costumes. They made the costumes themselves. They created a set, and that's going to expand here. And they've been running practices with kids. I don't know how old the youngest one, like 3 years old. And for kids to run practices with kids that old, that is not easy. They wrote the script. They wrote it themselves. They've done a fantastic job. So it's been a lot of hard work. There's been some inconvenience to putting this thing together. Sometimes there's been stress, but they're excited to do it. Most of them are excited to do it. My kids are excited to do it. The ones I know of, they're excited because they love Christmas. They love Jesus, and they love accomplishing something like this and watching their parents smile. They love to see that happen. So our kids are really a great example of joyful inconvenience. The wise men are also a pretty good example of joyful inconvenience. And so that's what the kids have chosen to focus on for today. Then I designed my message around what they're doing. So they decided what we're going to do today. So that's pretty cool. But the Magi are a great example for us. Think about these guys. I want you to think about these men, these wise men, however many there were, and what they did, and why did they did it. This is a band of intellectual geniuses who subjected themselves to incredible levels of inconvenience just to visit this newborn baby they weren't even related to. Why would they do it? Matthew chapter 2 is where we're going to be today. If you have a Bible, open it up. Matthew chapter 2. Verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." I'll stop right there. What is going on right here? This is one of those stories that you've been hearing for a long, long time. And it becomes too familiar. And what happens when something becomes too familiar? We start to glaze over. We start to tune out. I've been here before. I know about the wise men. I know. You kind of, your mind disengages. You stop asking questions. So I'm going to ask you, don't do that. Don't disengage. There are still things that you don't know about the wise men. There are still questions that we need to ask these guys. So resist the glaze. Even though you've been here before, you know about these guys. Let's stay engaged and ask these guys some questions. So there's somewhat of an interview. I have some questions that I'd like to ask them. And they're not here, so I have to talk and answer at the same time, unfortunately. So let's think about, what do we need to ask these guys? First question, who are you guys, Magi, and where do you come from? Who are these people? Where did they come from? Matthew says they came from the east. Magi from the east. So what does that tell us? Get a map in your head, or maybe a map on the screen. I think, let's see. Here's Judah and Israel. Jericho, Jerusalem is right about there. So what is east of this spot? Right here. You got the Jordan River coming down, the Dead Sea. So you got the Syrian desert. Magi from the east. Are they coming from the desert? Nothing lives in the desert. They don't survive in the desert. There may be a few wandering travelers, but you have to go further east to the land of the Persians, Babylonia. Babylon is just about due east of Jerusalem. So there's reason to believe that these guys came from Babylon. Now, what is that? What does that tell us? Well, Babylon, here's the other reason why we think they came from Babylon. The word magi, this Greek word magoi, this is the term used of a Persian or Babylonian wise man or priest who was an expert in astrology, interpretation of dreams, and other secret arts. So the title that these guys are given, this is where it came from. These guys are Persians. Now, it became broader used to as just general wise men, but that's a clue that these guys come from, most likely, Babylon. So if they're from Babylon, they're from this other nation, this other land. Next question, why are you guys interested in a Jewish king? Why do they want to come see this Jewish king? And some of you may have a clue. You may have an idea. Anybody remember Daniel? Remember Daniel? If you know your Old Testament, not everybody does, but that's okay. Daniel was a brilliant Jewish young man who was taken to Babylon from Israel during the time of exile, when everybody was yanked out of their homeland, held captive in Israel. He was this one of the best of the best. And so as they got to know him, they put him in this position, and he became more and more respected and had more and more authority, to the point where in Daniel 2:48, this is what it says. The king placed Daniel in a high position, lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. And if that had been written in Greek, it would have used the word magi. Daniel was in charge of all of them. And throughout his time, he maintained his faith. He was a man of strong faith and character and trust in the one true God. So Daniel lived in Babylon a long time and became one who would influence the wise men in that time. And so there's good reason to believe that his influence carried on for quite a while. Daniel was a prophet. He was able to predict the answers to dreams. He was able to tell the future. And Daniel gave one of the most significant prophecies in the entire Bible, as far as I'm concerned. And that is the prophecy that predicted when the Messiah would be killed. Daniel 600-something BC said this is when the Messiah will be cut off, is what it says. So I want to show you that. This is just kind of a little detail, but I find it very powerful because it tells us God knows what he's talking about. So Daniel chapter 9, here it is. And you have to look at it carefully to figure it out. Prophecies are mysterious sometimes. But here's what he said. Know and understand this. From the time the word goes out to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, the ruler, comes, there'll be 7 sevens and 62 sevens. It will be rebuilt with streets and a trench, but in times of trouble. After the 62 sevens, the anointed one will be put to death and will have nothing. So he's prophesying about the Messiah, this anticipated Messiah. This is when he's going to come. And it starts out saying when this declaration to rebuild Jerusalem is in shambles. And at some point, after Daniel's time, somebody was going to decree it's time to rebuild. From that declaration until the Messiah is cut off is 7 sevens and 62 sevens. That's kind of confusing. But he's talking about years. Each one is a period of years. So 7 sevens would be 49 years. 62 sevens is 434 years. So he gave the number of years until the Messiah is cut off, till the anointed one is put to death. If you're a math person, you put those numbers together. The declaration actually came by King Artaxerxes, 445 BC. So you can write that number down if you want to do the math later. Look it up on Wikipedia. Artaxerxes, 445 BC, 40 years or so after Daniel's prophecy was given. Now, if you do the math, 445 and then 483, if you add those sevens all together, you actually get, I think, 38 AD. 38. Then you have to do some more math because the prophetic calendar was only 360 days, not 365. So there's 6 years or so you have to deduct, and you get 32 AD when the Messiah would be cut off. That's a pretty powerful prophecy, if you ask me, that Daniel would predict that. So Daniel had made that declaration, and all these wise men generations to come had been influenced by that. So what we believe is that through Daniel's influence, the fact that many Jews remained in Babylon after the exile, it's likely that Jewish messianic influence remained strong in that region, even until New Testament times. That's why the wise men were looking, because they knew when it was supposed to happen. So they're looking for this. Prophecies say it, and then they see this star. We're following the star from the east. So they knew it was time to watch for something. They're astrologers. They're looking for signs in the stars, and God gave them this amazing, amazing, very clear sign, this miraculous star. That star began their very inconvenient journey. And I'm not going to get into the star, but I'm fascinated by it, and I just will mention that there's a video called The Star of Bethlehem that's from a faith-based perspective and a science-based perspective that suggests this is what I think the star was. And he says it probably wasn't just some floating orb that just showed up, because everybody in Jerusalem would have seen that and said, "What is that?" But nobody knew about it when the wise men came. So it might be something astrological, and there's some fascinating stuff in here. So this is a copy that's available if anybody wants to borrow it. But that has amazing reviews on Amazon. It's a highly respected video. I think the reviews are like 94% positive out of 700, 4 or 5 stars for 720 reviews on Amazon. So it is respectable in the Amazon world. So check that out. But these guys saw this thing, whatever it was, and they followed it to Jerusalem. So I would suggest that the wise men were Jewish to some degree, either by birth or by faith. They were following this king. They wanted to follow this king, this Jewish king. So somehow they come into Jerusalem and said, "Where's the king?" They're confident that the king's been born, and yet they don't know where he is. So here comes another question. Why did they have to ask, "Where is this guy? Where is he?" Because if you keep reading in Matthew, other people knew where he was. "We saw a star in the east. We come to worship him." When King Herod, verse 3, heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests, teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." So there was a prophecy, again from hundreds of years BC, that said this is where the Messiah would be born. How come the wise men didn't have that prophecy? How come they didn't know he'd be in Bethlehem? And the other guys, they said, "Hey, what's going on?" They said, "Well, the prophecies say in Bethlehem it's going to happen." How come they didn't know that? Well, because they were from Babylon. They had Daniel's prophecy. They didn't have all of the prophecies. They didn't have all of God's wisdom. So apparently they didn't have the prophecies of Micah, which were still given even before Daniel. So they had to ask. And others knew it's going to happen in Bethlehem. So you keep going and see how this story finished up, which this, you're familiar with this. So Herod called the Magi, verse 7. He called them secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go, make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." We all know he's lying. After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary. They bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So this is what where these wise men came from, the best we understand, and why they would be coming to Jerusalem to see this king, why they would even care. So now that you understand a little bit about their background, I want to kind of change gears and look at some of the ways they chose to be inconvenienced and some of the things they went through that we might not think about when we sing "We Three Kings" or when we read this passage. Okay, so they came to Jesus. I'd like to look at, okay, what did that really, really mean? So the first thing is looking at this travel idea. Babylon was not close at all. They did not charter a plane. They did not take a train or drive a car. All the Christmas cards show them on camels, which is the animal they had back then that could survive on not much water hiking in the desert. But so we don't know. We don't know how they traveled. They probably did ride on camels. I mean, they were well-to-do. They had means. But they had a long way to go. They couldn't go straight across. They couldn't go straight across the desert because it was way too dry. Their animals would die. They would die. It just wouldn't work. So they had to go up the Euphrates. This was probably their route. This follows the Euphrates River up here, and then they can circle on down where water is available all the way down to Jerusalem. Now, we talked about Mary and Joseph, their travels. That was what, like something like this, about that far, and that was, I forget how many miles that was, like 100 miles, something like that. This right here is about 960 miles. That these wise men traveled. Google Maps says you would hike it in 293 hours. And I think that's without stops, without using the restroom, without eating, 293 hours of walking straight. So let's suppose they were at 25 miles is a pretty good day. 25 miles of progress. I'm not sure how fast camels go, but I know they don't run. They don't run. So let's just say they could make 25 miles a day. That's 39 days of travel. Probably about 2 months overall if you put it all together, roughly. We don't know exactly, but I want you to see the perspective of how inconvenienced they put themselves to do this, to make this trip. Probably took a couple months. And now think about this. Okay, you got the story in your mind. The wise men come. They see baby Jesus. They give him their gifts. They bow down and worship. How long did they stay there? Not long. One little visit. Probably didn't spend the night. It's a few hours. 293 hours of travel for 2 or 3 hours of visit with this king. And then they turn around and 293 more hours back. Travel was not convenient in those days. They were taking risks. They were making huge sacrifices. And yet it was no big deal to them. It was no big deal. They were excited to do that. When I think about that distance, we always kind of look at compare ourselves. When my parents lived in Wellsboro, 3.5 hours away, I would not go there for a day trip. If I'm going to go to Wellsboro, I'm going to spend the night. hopefully 2 nights. I don't want to travel 7 hours for a 3-hour visit. This doesn't make sense to me. Well, let's just expand that out. Oh my goodness, would you have done that? Would you have done that for 2 or 3 hours with this newborn baby? Maybe you get to see him vomit. Jesus probably did that, by the way. He was a normal baby. That's incredible. And yet, look at verse 10. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. They literally, it says, they rejoiced with very great joy. It's like a double rejoice word here, phrase. They rejoiced with very great joy. Another translation says they shouted joyfully. The star has led us to the place where the king is, this baby. They're not feeling inconvenienced. They're not feeling like this has been such a drag. These royal officials put their normal lives on hold for multiple months. They endured day after day of discomfort. They took significant risk just to get a glimpse of this baby, to give him something. This baby whom the prophecies and the stars spoke of. How could they look at it that way? How could they feel, well, it was just those days and travel was like that? And no, there was nothing normal about this trip. The reason they could be rejoicing with great joy and not feel inconvenienced at all is because of where their heart was focused. They wanted Jesus more than anything. They wanted to be here. They wanted to see him. So the treasures they present, this gold, frankincense, and myrrh, these are valuable treasures. These are precious. This costs something. It wasn't hard for them to give. It wasn't hard at all because Jesus was their treasure. And you can see that from this journey. Jesus was clearly their treasure. So they step into the house, and there's this moment of silence, this reverential awe, when their eyes are fixed on this child. They can't believe they're there. And I don't think there was a glowing halo over his head. I don't think there was anything like that. He was a normal baby with his mom and dad. Looked like an ordinary kid, but they knew who he was. They knew. And so in silent awe, they each get to their knees. And they touch their heads to the floor, just amazed at this experience that God has blessed them with. That's the first thing they did. They walk into the house and they're down. They worship first. And then after a while, you know, there's, I don't know how long that was, but then they get up and they realize, oh yeah, we brought something. And then they present their gifts, which were very precious. And they give him these gifts, and The gifts were very significant. Each gift had a different symbolism to it. They meant something. It wasn't just, oh, what can I give? These were very well thought out gifts based on who they knew Jesus to be. So as they gave these gifts, Mary and Joseph understood they know what they're doing. They know who this is. And so I just want to just let you know what those things are if you maybe aren't aware of that. But these gifts are not an inconvenience at all. They did this because they wanted to. But the gold is pretty easy. That represents royalty, right? Jesus is king. They said, we want to see the king of the Jews. So this gold represents royalty. Very valuable, very precious, meant for a king. Frankincense, what is that about? Frankincense is a fragrance that was mostly used in the temple. This is a temple fragrance. So Jesus was going to be a priest. They knew that. Jesus was going to be a link between man and God. So they gave him frankincense. And then there's the myrrh. And that's the most odd gift of them all. Because that was an expensive perfume that was used in burial. They would use that to bury somebody. They knew Jesus would be a sacrifice. They knew he was the Lamb of God. So they present these gifts, these treasures, because Jesus was their treasure, And so all those inconveniences they had been through, they were worth it. It was joyful. Inconvenience kind of melts away when we have this passion and this love and for them, this worship. It didn't really matter that much. They went through all those inconveniences. Inconvenience becomes joyful when it's prompted by love. That's where we want to be at Christmas. The different things that we might have to go through, they need to be prompted by love. So I'm wondering, we can think about these wise men, but we have to come back to today. And I wonder if God is calling you to any joyful inconveniences this Christmas season. And that's going to be different for everybody. Maybe God has prepared and positioned you for some special opportunity, some way that he wants you to do something unique that might be inconvenient, but when your heart's in the right place, it's a joyful inconvenience. A couple months ago, we found out that my wife's brother was going to be able to come visit. Coming from Indiana, they've never been to Kutztown before. They have 5 kids, and they're all like the same age as our kids. And they're driving out from Indiana. So when our kids caught wind that was happening, oh my goodness, they started to buzz. They were excited. And Ann and I are thinking, okay, how's this going to work? Our house is not that big. Are we going to? But they're strategizing and figuring it all out. And they came up with the answer. We can do it. We can fit 13 people in this 3-bedroom house. No problem. All the girls will go upstairs in the attic bedroom. All the boys will sleep in Ethan's room. And Nathan and Michelle, aunt and uncle, they get to sleep in Abby's bedroom. And everybody's good. Everybody's got a place. And nobody even has to sleep in the living room. We're going to figure this out. Was that inconvenient for them to figure that out? No way. They were motivated. They're like, this is going to be great. This is going to be exciting. And I think it will be. Was it a burden to think about them coming? Not at all. I don't anticipate it being a burden for them to be here. I'll let you know when it actually happens. If we were like sardines, like, you can ask me about that later. I probably won't tell you in public. But prompted by love, this is not inconvenient. This is exciting. This is joyful inconvenience. We don't care. Like, I'll sleep on the floor, the kids say. They have no trouble with that. So as you think about what you might have coming, there's travel and there's family issues and there's expectations and different things. Inconvenience becomes even more joyful when it's prompted by love and inspired by worship. When worship is a motivator, I mean, there's one thing to spend time with family. That's really cool. But when you're doing it because you get to serve Christ in this, when you get that, and you're doing it for that inconvenient joy becomes even bigger. It becomes even more. That's when we're offering our gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Jesus said when we serve one of those, the least of those, we're serving him. And when we really get that, when we really understand, I have opportunity to bow down and worship Christ, the newborn king, and give him gold and frankincense and myrrh. I'm looking around. What can I give? What can I give? And we're not necessarily talking about money or presents. Maybe, but we want to open our eyes and see, okay, where's God calling me to some joyful inconvenience? What can I do? It might be inconvenient, but I'm going to love it when I do it. That's what I'd like you to think about. That's what I'd like you to walk away thinking about. And one opportunity God's given, he's connected Cornerstone with a family this season. They could really use some help, really use some encouragement. And so we've decided, this has been sort of last minute. Most of you have heard about it, but we decided to open up the need to all of you and share that opportunity to bless this needy family. We're not telling you who they are. They don't live in Kutztown. They live out of town a little bit. But we want to serve them. We want to bless them. And we want to worship Christ by blessing them. And so that's one opportunity. You weren't necessarily planning on that. You didn't even know about it until a week ago. So to give something you're not intending to give, when you already have other plans, that could be inconvenient. Could be a sacrifice that you weren't planning on. But when your heart is caught up with Jesus, those kinds of things become joyful inconvenience. And so that's not, this isn't some manipulation. You better do this one. This is one opportunity that some of you are going to decide, I want to be part of. But there are lots of other opportunities. And so I get excited when I hear about other opportunities, when I hear stories that other families, this is what this family does. And so I've mentioned some of these things before, but I'm going to mention them again. There's one family I know of. Every year they find a family in need through an organization they trust, and they go out shopping. They get a wish list, a need list, all these things, and they go out shopping. They buy all this stuff and put it together, and they send it to be delivered to this family. I don't believe they ever get to see that family, but every year they bless big time another family. That's a really cool idea. There's another family that I know of that goes to Saucony Cross. We just had a Christmas party for them. Christmas Day, they go to Saucony Cross and knock on doors, see if anybody's around who doesn't have somebody to hang out with. They just go in and visit with them and spend some time with them. Like, to me, when I think, you're doing that on Christmas Day? Are you kidding? I'll do that the week before Christmas. That's inconvenient. Cool ideas. And, you know, there are other ideas I haven't heard about, but let's look for that. As we give to people in need, as we look for ways to bless, we're doing it to Christ. So there are a lot of inconveniences that these guys went through that God might be calling us to that can just really boost our Christmas to be more than it would be otherwise. One of the things that, you know, our family's trying to do this, and one of the things for our family is we like to give Jesus the first gift every Christmas. So Christmas morning we use this Gospel for Asia catalog that has all these things you can give to kids. Or families in Asia somewhere, families in need, you can give them a sewing machine and they can start a business. You can give them a rickshaw and that's a job for a guy. Or you can give them bunnies or chickens. And so our kids get this catalog sometime in December and they just right away they start going through it, circling things. Like, I went through, what was it, the Sears catalog or something like that at Christmas, and I circled all the Lego stuff. Like, this is what I want, this is what I want. My kids are saying, I want a water buffalo. And they know they're never going to see it. And so, like, Christmas morning, that's the first thing we do. We give Jesus a present. And in my, if I was one of my kids, I'd be thinking, let's get on with it. Let's open up our presents. But they don't do that. They're further than I was, I feel like. And so it's, I love to see that Christ is in the middle. And for them, it's, they're happy. They're happy to do it. So I just want to encourage you, let your heart get caught up with Jesus like these wise men. Oh my goodness, 960 miles. And just let the inconveniences God is calling us to just to be part of the journey to get there, and let that journey be joyful in spite of the inconvenience. So don't get me wrong, this isn't just let's look for ways to inconvenience ourselves. The point isn't to be inconvenienced. It's about opening our eyes to opportunities to love somebody, to worship Christ, looking for those opportunities this Christmas. So it's all about full hearts, just looking to bless somebody because of how we've been blessed. So just think about this thought as we wrap up. How inconvenient was it for Jesus to leave heaven? How inconvenient was that? And I think about how he must be treated in heaven versus how we treated him here. Big difference. Big difference. Hebrews chapter 12 tells us it was the joy set before him that motivated him to endure the cross. The crucifixion was a joyful inconvenience because it was a necessary part of that journey that led to you. That was a journey that led to you. You are the joy of Jesus. That thought brings me to my knees and my head to the floor. Wow. You are the joy of Jesus. Those are the kinds of realities that can just drive us to worship this Christmas season. And then to look around for what treasures might I have to give him? What joyful inconvenience is God calling me to? Don't miss out on that. Don't miss out on that part of Christmas. Imagine if the wise men decided to stay home. But they went, and they touched eternity. And every day, we have another chance to touch eternity by loving somebody else. Whether it's somebody in our family or a stranger, every day is another opportunity to touch eternity. Ebenezer Scrooge figured that out by the end of A Christmas Carol, right? And you know the story. I'm going to read just a little bit from the original. Remember how his whole perspective was changed. And so then, rather begrudgingly giving his clerk that one day off work, he remembers this meat shop has this turkey. Not just a regular old turkey. The prize turkey of the entire town. Huge, massive turkey. And so he buys this huge turkey and has it sent to Bob Cratchit, his clerk. "I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's," whispered Scrooge, rubbing his hands and splitting with a laugh. "He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim." The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one, but write it he did somehow, and went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the coming of the poulterer's man. As he stood there waiting his arrival, the knocker caught his eye. Remember the knocker? "I shall love it as long as I live," cried Scrooge, patting it with his hand. "I scarcely ever looked at it before. What an honest expression it has on its face. It's a wonderful knocker. Here's the turkey. Hello, whoop, how are you? Merry Christmas." It was a turkey. He never could have stood upon his legs, that bird. He would have snapped him short off in a minute, like sticks of sealing wax. "Why, it's impossible to carry that to Camden Town," said Scrooge. "You must have a cab." The chuckle with which he said this, and the chuckle with which he paid for the turkey, and the chuckle with which he paid for the cab, and the chuckle with which he recompensed the boy, were only to be exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down breathless in a chair again and chuckled till he cried. Do you hear joyful inconvenience? His whole perspective was turned around. Joyful inconvenience. Let's look for that this Christmas. Lord, I thank you for all the inconveniences we can see as we look back on the story. From Mary and Joseph having to make that trip from Nazareth to Bethlehem. These wise men traveled all the way from Babylon. And Jesus, who came all the way from heaven. Father, I pray that our hearts would be steered in your direction, and that we would just fill up. As we see in Ebenezer Scrooge, his heart was just overflowing with joy and a desire to give and love. Let that be us this Christmas. And let that be us in front of our family, as we're facing stressful things. God, I pray that joy would overshadow that. And that this would be a wonderful Christmas, because it's about love, it's about worshiping you, and it's filled with joyful inconvenience. Show us those unique things that you have for us to do, and I pray that we will not be begrudging at all, but be filled with joy. In Jesus' name, amen.